While there are few things more distressing to a parent than a crying baby who cannot be consoled or quieted, but persistent infant crying is much more than a parenting nuisance. Crying and the parental exhaustion associated with it can trigger serious problems, such as relationship stress, breastfeeding failure, and even shaken baby syndrome, also known as abusive head trauma, the leading cause of child abuse fatalities. So what are the causes for this inconsolable crying in the first few months of life, and what's a parent to do? Joining me this morning to help us understand this issue and what can be done about it is Dr. Anne Botash, a professor of pediatrics at the Upstate Medical University and a nationally recognized expert in child sexual abuse evaluation. She directs the University Hospital's Child Abuse Referral and Evaluation Program, CARE, and she's the vice chair for education in the Department of Pediatrics, teaching residents and students about the dangers and treatments for child abuse. Welcome, Dr. Botash.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for coming in today. Let's begin with a better understanding of what is this persistent crying that some infants experience. I know it's been referred to as colic. So what is it exactly?
Well, colic is one of those, it's sort of been passed down over the years as a diagnosis, but it's really not very well known what causes it or why children do this. There are some characterizations that people have given to it. One doctor, Dr. Wessel, who's written in the literature, describes it as being a child who cries for 3 hours straight, for more than 3 days straight, and 3 weeks straight, so 3 days out of a week and 3 weeks straight. And that's kind of the classic definition of colic. It's all about crying. You don't want to make that diagnosis of colic unless you're absolutely sure that there isn't something wrong with the baby, and there are other things that can cause a baby to cry. Just being sick can make a baby cry, being hungry, wet diaper, all the typical things. And I think what happens with colic is that the parents, who are good parents, have checked all those things, and then the baby is still crying, and the question is, why? And it tends to be, no particular reason at all. It may just be a baby who's very sensitive to the environment, and maybe stimuli that other baby don't seem to react to cause this baby to just become upset.
And isn't it also a factor that characterizes it that they're somewhat inconsolable? It's hard to soothe them. Is that
a piece
of it?
Oh yes. If you've ever seen a colicky baby, it's not the same as a baby who's crying and is hungry. That baby settles down after they get the bottle. They're happy and playful, and this baby still crying after the bottle, and maybe is happy for a little bit, but then all of a sudden is crying again. And I know when I see a baby that has colic, I'll go into the exam room and the parent has this typical look on their face of just exhaustion and frustration. And after about 5 minutes, I get that look on my face because I find that it's very, very hard because as soon as a baby cries, you feel it, you want to do something. And here's this baby that you just can't seem to get to calm down.
Yeah, it sounds like it's almost like nature's way. I mean, why it causes so much distress and the caregiver seems to be almost, the cry of a baby is probably as basic a stimuli to create angst in the caregiver as any.
Right.
It's almost nature's way of protecting.
Right. So that's a good parent. You would be kind of worried if you went and saw a parent who had this crying baby and they just left them crying, Instead, the good parent is the one who gets so, more upset by the crying baby. They have more empathy.
So why, I know over the years there have been a lot of hypotheses, and you mentioned Dr. Wessel, as to what, though, is the etiology. What's the cause? Why are some babies more prone? One other point, though, is there's also a periodicity to it. There's also a predictive. I mean, some babies are more fussy, so to speak, at certain times of the day as well.
Right.
Does that go along with this picture?
In some babies. And, some babies don't follow that 3 days, 3 hour rule either. Some are just, they cry for an hour every day and they're colicky at that time. And maybe they don't actually meet the criteria of colic, but they're colicky. And that's enough to make people you know, feel so uncomfortable.
It has the same impact.
It's the same. And, you know, it's nicer when it's only an hour. And it tends to be, I think, a normal finding for babies to cry at a certain time each day. And it, you know, usually, you know, it's either in the morning or in the evening. And it's bad when it's the evening and it's, a you know, parents who just came home from work and here's this baby that just cries and cries and cries for 2 hours. There really is not a known etiology for why colic happens and why some babies and not other babies. And you can find studies that say it's, you know, typically the firstborn, and then other studies where it's the later born children. You can find people who say, oh, it's, you know, something that they ate, and there's some remedies out there for it, like simethicone drops. Those don't really have any basis in research, you know, as far as whether that works or doesn't work. Some research has actually shown it's just as useful to give the baby water. So I think I think the most helpful thing about colic is going to the doctor and finding out the baby actually has colic. And so you can stop, you know, making yourself crazy and trying to fix this thing that's unfixable, as long as you're sure that there's no reason. You know, there are things that babies can happen to babies that you might not see as a parent. Maybe they have a scratched cornea, you know, so you want to go to the doctor and make sure that there isn't something like that, or a hair tourniquet on a toe, or some other reason that there might be a cry that, you know, or maybe there is an upset stomach, and that would be something that could be treatable. So you want to make sure about that. But once that's defined, this is a colicky baby, this baby has colic, I think that allows the parent to kind of step away and now try some other remedies that you know, mostly will help them to deal with it and also help the baby to be a little bit calmer.
Yeah, hold that thought, because we're going to come back and go extensively into what are the kinds of things that parents can do, because obviously it is a distressing set of circumstances. So stay right with us. We're going to be right back with Dr. Botash after a short break. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with Dr. Ann Botash, and we've been talking about the dreaded colic. And before the break, we were trying to, you know, get a sense of what might be causing this. And I think the fact is, with some babies, it could be one thing, and with other babies, it's something else. But the fact is, you have that same pattern of inconsolable crying.
Right. I think that trying to figure out the cause can be distracting too from just, you know, going ahead and treating it. It's multifactorial. Some babies it might help, you know, to rub their tummy or, you know, give them something for a stomach ache. Some babies that won't do anything at all. And, you know, some babies will respond to sound, and so, you know, music or something like that. Some babies, taking them for a ride in the car, actually many babies, that really works, is to take them somewhere so the motion actually helps.
So clearly, it's a very distressing circumstance, especially for a new parent, I would think, you know, one with little experience, but also maybe with less patience or a sense of the big picture of what's going to unfold. I mean, this doesn't last forever, does it?
No, thank goodness. The longest usually is 6 months, which is still pretty long, but usually the average is a few weeks. You know, it starts usually by 4 weeks of age, and it's usually gone by 2 months. So it doesn't usually last that long. It peaks around 6 weeks. That's usually the worst. And those time frames actually tend to correspond with the time frames for peaks in abusive head trauma. So people have studied that and shown, you know, that there might be this correlation with excessive crying and abusive head trauma. And so that's, I think, my fear in seeing, when I see a child who has colic, that the parent is just going to become so upset with this and the inability and the helplessness that it causes in the parent to cause some kind of trauma to the child.
So that's really, I think, it sounds to me that the potential for a relationship breakdown, for want of a better term, is the major concern that certainly we would have, or pediatricians would have, about the effects of colic. I mean, it's the fact that the parent loses control, the parent may become depressed or, you know, just seems at loose ends as to how to handle it. And obviously other stresses in their life could play a role too. I mean, if they can't pay the mortgage and they're out of work or they're a single parent or what have you, that can also contribute.
I think it's all those things. I think that children that incessantly cry and then you're not feeling, you're feeling like you can't help them at all. So you feel
you can't
helpless.
Soothe them.
You can't help them. So it builds kind of a guilt in the parent that I'm not a good parent. I can't do a good job here. And that then sets off all these other, cascade of feelings that could lead to an abusive incident or not. I mean, it may just cause a rift in the two parents caring for a child. You know, what's the matter with you? Why can't you calm that child down, sort of thing. So I think there's all sorts of things that could come out of colic. And what I'd like to see, you know, is that a parent learns that they really are a good parent, that they've done everything that they can, and that, you know, this is not them. This is the baby's temperament, and that the baby is going to outgrow it, that this is going to be okay, that the baby is growing well. I think that's why it's worthwhile to go to the doctors. You know, the baby is growing well in spite of all of this. The parent is doing everything correctly. Yes, they're exhausted. Yes, they're going to be exhausted. And you know, we can relate to that this is really hard on the parents. You know, even those words are not enough. I mean, it is really hard. Parents are exhausted and are just, you know, so tired because they're not getting any rest from the crying if it goes on into the night and those kinds of things. And I think to just feel that kind of validation that, okay, this happens and it's going to end. The baby is not a bad baby. It's not going to be forever.
You're not a bad parent because you can't quiet.
Right.
I read somewhere also that there's a possibility this could contribute to SIDS or sudden infant death syndrome. How does it do that?
It's actually sort of a roundabout way that parent trying everything puts the baby to sleep on their belly, which is the opposite of what's recommended of the back to sleep position. And obviously the whole campaign for back to sleep is really to prevent SIDS. And so, you know, when you're in that state of, okay, maybe it's because he's on his back, you know, and then you put him on his belly, well, that's the wrong thing to do.
So, I mean, what do you tell parents? I mean, what really can be done? I mean, you're in the midst of this period, however long it lasts. I mean, in terms of the months and the hours. And you're trying everything you can figure out, and yet the baby's still screaming. I mean, what do you tell the parents to do?
Well, I tell them to try everything that I know of that may or may not work. And, you know,
so you have a laundry list of suggestions.
And I don't make any promises that any of them will work. And I don't try to do them as, you know, an experiment. Well, let's try this and see if this works and then try this. I try everything. You know, I'll try the simethicone drops, even though there's no proof that it works. I'll tell them, you know, well, if carrying the baby around helps, then we need to see if we can help you. You know, if you can't afford one, get a snuggly so you can carry the baby around all the time.
What about swaddling? Because I was told that when I was raising my infants as well, and I've seen that in the literature.
I think that works for
some kids.
Like
wrapping a baby tightly.
Yeah, wrapping a baby tightly, lowering the lights, creating a calming atmosphere. I think that a parent who becomes excited and anxious about the baby crying, the baby does kind of feed into that.
So it transmitted to the baby.
And it can become an endless cycle. The baby starts crying, the parent starts getting upset, and then it goes on and on. And to break that cycle with whatever soothes the baby, and that might be calming music, low lights, swaddling.
And you also mentioned motion because it seems like there's a universal, I mean, not that you can be driving around through the night in your car.
No, but sometimes other things like a swing or just, you know, they I think they actually sell things that cause the bed to vibrate that you can put, you know, in the baby's bed so that you don't have to stay up all night.
And things like pacifier, sometimes sucking can also help them quiet. If
yes.
they've been fed adequately and they're not hungry, but just the sucking sucking self-soothes.
Right. I mean, beyond all that, I think the thing to do is to also, I tend to focus on the parent. You know, what does the parent need now so that they can calm down and recognize that they've done everything? And once they've recognized that they've done everything, what do they need, you know, just to be able to step back? Can they step back? Can they, you know, go into another room for a little while, close the door, let the baby cry for 15 minutes? You know, 15 minutes is okay. Beyond that, it gets hard on the parent, too. They know they left the screaming child in there. Find somebody else to come over, take care of the baby for a little while, just so that you get a little bit of a break. Take a nap, you know, do what you need to do for as much you know, as you need to do it so that this baby is not in danger from you. And I don't mean it that I think that parents, all parents, could hurt their child. I really don't think that that's true. I think most parents aren't, even in this situation, aren't going to hurt their child. But there's a risk there when you're so frustrated that it's better for the baby to be with somebody who's had a full night of sleep and, you know, and trust is a good person who can watch the baby for a little bit of time, you know, have a healthy snack, do things for yourself, just even if it's just 15 minutes and just, you know, repeat to yourself that this is not going to last forever. This baby is going to go to sleep. You know, it's going to be okay.
I think getting a break is a very, very a key piece of advice, though, because obviously if you're on the front line with a colicky baby, it has to have all those negative consequences. You know, a person just has to get so agitated and jazzed up. So the ability to even just, as you said, have someone safe, you know, someone you trust, take care of a baby even for 15, 20 minutes, a half an hour, to give you that kind of break or allow you to take a nap or even do some exercise or something that would reduce your own stress.
Right, right.
I think that's really important,
especially when you think about that it's possible that the parent's anxiety can feed into it. So this is also a treatment for the baby, for the parent to get a little break.
Have you seen in your own practice, obviously this is the kind of thing you've had a lot of experience with, have you seen those kinds of recommendations take hold and make a difference? Or what's your experience in general
seeing this? I think colic is colic. It's very hard for it. It's not an easy treatment. It does take time to just go away. But I have seen these treatments make it better. You know, it just makes it maybe the child's still crying, but it's not 3 hours. It's down to an hour. And some of that is just because the parents have learned to implement whatever they can do to calm the baby down. Some of it, I think, is just time. You know, we'll see the baby back in a week. The colic may be gone in a week. So, you know, from my perspective as a pediatrician, I'm not sure which worked, whether it was, you know, the intervention or it really isn't going to last that long for every child.
And you said it's pretty hard, I mean, in terms of any kind of research, to really get to the cause of this, because you said it's multifactorial. Is it that's the reason it's hard to get to it, because there could be any number of causes, or is it that there hasn't been, you know, serious interest in trying to figure out what the cause is?
Oh, I think there's a lot of literature. It's just we haven't found it yet. We just haven't found. And I don't think it's going to be one cause. I think mm-hmm. that it's probably something to do with the way that the brain is formed and immature and, you know, isn't fully developed yet. And in some kids, that particular part of the arousability, the crying part, is hyper excitable for whatever reason.
But I think your main point here is that it is part of normal development. And it will leave eventually, it will end, and parents just need to somehow maintain some sense of sanity through the period.
Right.
And know that they can, whatever they can do eventually, yeah. this too will change, this
yes.
too will
I
end.
Mean, I always feel very terrible when I see parents come in with the colicky baby, because I want to help them too. I feel helpless. I give them all these things and then send them on their way with this crying baby.
Well, Dr. Anne Botash, professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University and national expert in prevention of child abuse, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. And hopefully we've got some parents out there who feel a little bit better about their parenting and will at least get the kind of help they need. Well, there's more HealthLink on air ahead, so stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.